Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Story number one. I've always been the type who struggles with sleep. Insomnia became such a regular part of my life that I almost wore it like a badge of honor. Staying up till 3 a.m., scrolling through meaningless things online, staring at the ceiling, or pacing around the house. This happened a few years ago, but even today I think about it almost every night. It's the kind of thing that clings to you no matter how much you try to shake it off. It started small, almost dismissible. I'd catch shadows moving across the hallway when I knew I was home alone. Not a big, obvious figure, just a flash, like someone stepping back into a corner before I could really look. At first, I brushed it off as the play of light from a passing car, or maybe just my overtired eyes. But then, during the day, little cracks started appearing in what I thought was my normal life. At work, I'd sit in meetings and feel like the people around me weren't themselves. Same faces, same voices, but something subtle was off. Their reactions came half a second late. Their eyes didn't quite align with what they were saying, like their bodies were puppets being controlled by someone else. Sometimes I'd zone out and stare at them too long, trying to figure out if I was imagining it. That's the worst part, when you can't trust your own senses. I chalked it up to sleep deprivation, but then the nights got heavier. Literally. One night I was lying down, trying to force myself into rest when I felt this crushing weight on my chest. It wasn't like anxiety or a racing heart. This felt external, like something was physically pressing me down. My lungs worked in shallow gasps. My arms wouldn't respond. My legs were dead weight. My body locked in place like a corpse while my mind screamed at it to move. That's when I saw him. In the corner of my room where the dark gathers thickest, something shifted. A shape too tall to belong there. He didn't walk forward. He dissolved in and out of the shadows, like he was made of smoke that hadn't decided what form to take. The only features I caught were faintly glowing eyes. Not bright, not like lamps, just dim embers that seemed to flicker when they locked on me. My chest burned, and I thought it was a nightmare until I heard it. A voice, hoarse, dragged out, like rocks grinding against each other. I couldn't make sense of the words, and then, blackness. I woke up sweating, my body light again, everything normal. At least that's what I told myself. But it didn't stop. Every night after, he returned, always at the foot of my bed, eyes flickering in the dark. Sometimes I could make out a faint outline of his head tilting, as if studying me. And then came the voice, not random whispers anymore. He started saying things. Things about me, about my life, about moments no one else knew. One night, it was about the time I'd hidden under the porch as a kid during a storm. Another, it was about a fight I'd had with a close friend and the exact words I had said. Each time he spoke, and then the world blurred to black. Each morning, I'd wake up with the memory sharp in my head, but no proof it had happened. I tried telling myself it was sleep paralysis. That made sense. People see shadow men, demons, hallucinations. That's a documented thing. But the more it happened, the harder it was to dismiss, because some of the things he said felt like warnings. One night, his voice dragged out a word that froze me. Fire. Then he said someone close to me would die. My mother. I wanted to scream, but my throat locked. My mind was racing, even though my body was useless. When I woke up, I sat on the edge of my bed till morning light poured in. I told myself it wasn't real. It couldn't be. For a week, this same cycle happened. Him at the foot of my bed, repeating, elaborating, saying things about flames, smoke, my mom's name, and death. Then suddenly he was gone. Just like that. For months, nothing. No shadows, no paralysis, no voice. I almost convinced myself I'd gone through a phase of sleep deprivation psychosis. I started sleeping better. I laughed at myself for believing it. And then the fire happened. 4 months later, my house caught fire. Completely random. The investigators said it could have been faulty wiring, but they weren't sure. It started in the middle of the night. I woke up choking on smoke, flames already crawling up the walls like they'd been waiting for me to notice. The house filled with this unnatural roaring sound, and everything blurred in chaos. I barely made it outside in time. My pet didn't. The body was found charred, unrecognizable. My mom had been out shopping late that evening, a coincidence that saved her life. If she'd been home, she would have been asleep in her room, right above where the fire started. I couldn't stop thinking about what that creature, whatever it was, had said. Fire. Someone close. My mom. For weeks after, I tried rationalizing it. Faulty wiring makes sense. Pets die tragically in house fires. Sadly common. My mom not being home? Luck. That's all it was. Terrible, cruel luck and timing. But then there are nights I lie awake and can almost feel that heaviness pressing on my chest again. Sometimes I swear I catch glowing eyes when I blink in the dark, like the after image of a flame. I tell myself it's just trauma, mixed with lack of sleep, the brain's way of punishing me for not resting. And yet, every once in a while, I think back to those weeks when he was visiting me nightly, almost like he wanted me to know what was coming. Almost like he had given me a glimpse, not of a warning to save someone, but of inevitability. Because sometimes, late at night, when I let my thoughts spiral, I wonder if he really disappeared at all, or if he's just waiting for the next time he has something to tell me. And the truth is, I don't know what scares me more. That he wasn't real, or that he was. Story number two. I've been a city bus driver for about 15 years now, and I thought I'd seen just about everything the late shift could throw at me. Drunks who can't find their stop, kids trying to sneak rides, people nodding off and riding the loop three times. But what happened last January has stuck with me in a way none of those things ever did. It's one of those nights where you can't quite decide if you saw something paranormal or if your own tired mind just played tricks on you. The problem is, it hasn't stopped since. It was the kind of cold that cuts right through the jacket. Snow had just started falling again, thin flakes swirling under the yellow glow of the streetlights. I was wrapping up my last loop, the bus mostly empty, the fluorescent lights inside flickering just enough to make me wish they'd finally get replaced. Only two passengers were left, both slouched in their seats with their heads against the windows, dead asleep. At the last downtown stop, a man in a gray coat stepped onto the bus. I noticed immediately he didn't pay. No fumbling for a pass, no digging for coins, not even the polite nod you sometimes get from regulars. He just glanced at me and walked straight down the aisle. I don't know why, but the way he moved bothered me, like his feet weren't quite connecting with the floor. The aisle lights made his coat look damp, like it had been caught in snow for hours. I kept driving, but I found myself checking the rearview mirror more than usual. The two asleep passengers never stirred. The man in the gray coat sat midway down the bus, hands folded on his lap. His face was turned just slightly so I couldn't really make out his features. And then, this is the part that made my stomach drop. When I checked the mirror again, the seat was empty. I blinked hard, checked again, and there he was. But this time his head was turned up, staring straight at me. It wasn't like he caught me glancing. It was like he had been waiting for me to look. I kept my eyes on the road after that. It wasn't worth staring myself into paranoia. Still, I could feel it. The weight of his gaze burned through the mirror. I thought maybe he was just some weird guy messing with me, so I focused on finishing the loop. By the time I reached the depot, the other two passengers shuffled off half awake. The gray coat stayed seated. I called out that it was the last stop, but he didn't move. I sighed, grabbed my flashlight, and walked down the aisle. The seat was empty. Not just empty, but cold. The cushion was soaked, like it had been absorbing melting snow for hours, though he had only been on board for 20 minutes. When I touched the window beside it, my hand came away with frost, a thin white outline as if someone had been breathing against it. The glass wasn't fogged, just iced over from the inside. That's not something I've ever seen happen in a heated bus. And there, on the floor under the seat, was a ticket stub, old, brittle, printed in faded ink. The year was 1983. I couldn't make out the rest because the paper was damp, smudged as if snowmelt had bled through the numbers. The whole thing felt wrong. The heat in the bus hummed, yet the air around that seat still felt colder than the depot outside. I tried not to think too much about it. I gathered my stuff, signed out, and headed home. The depot yard was quiet, just the crunch of my boots in the fresh snow. That's when I heard it, footsteps behind me. Not a shuffle or echo, but deliberate steps, heavy and steady. I turned around, and about 30 feet back stood the man in the gray coat, his head tilted.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Tilted slightly like before, just watching. I called out more out of reflex than anything, but he didn't respond. He didn't even move. I started walking toward him, but when I got within 10 feet, he was gone. Not walked away, not ducked behind anything, just gone. The snow where he stood was undisturbed. As I stood there trying to process it, a loud crack sounded above me. I stepped back instinctively, and a massive sheet of snow slid off the depot roof, crashing exactly where I'd been standing seconds earlier. Heavy, wet chunks scattered across the ground, burying the spot knee-deep. If I hadn't moved, I would have been pinned. Maybe worse. I don't like thinking about that part too much. The next day, I mentioned it to the depot supervisor. He brushed it off, said sometimes the system glitches and people double back in the logs. But I hadn't stopped for anyone else. I hadn't even opened the doors after the gray coat boarded. He gave me a look like I was just overtired, and I didn't press it further. What else could I say? For a while, I convinced myself it was just a weird hallucination brought on by exhaustion. But then things started happening again. Little things at first. When I pull up to a stop late at night, I sometimes hear the thump of heavy footsteps boarding. I turn to check, but the aisle is empty. Other times, the rearview mirror fogs up with condensation, like someone exhaled directly onto it, though the rest of the bus windows are clear. Once, when the bus was completely empty, I glanced back and saw fresh, wet footprints trailing down the aisle, melting into the rubber floor. They vanished halfway down, as though whoever made them had just stopped existing. I try to keep it rational. Maybe the heater blows unevenly. Maybe snow tracked in earlier takes longer to dry. Maybe the fluorescent flicker makes me imagine movement. The skeptic in me keeps a running list of explanations. But the part of me that still remembers that night, the soaked seat, the icy glass, the footsteps in the snow, knows there's something more to it. The worst was last week. I was parked at a red light around 2 a.m. Bus completely empty. The city was quiet under fresh snow. I felt that weight again, the unmistakable feeling of someone standing just behind me. The hairs on my arms rose. I didn't look in the mirror this time. I didn't want to see. But I swear I felt the brush of cold air against the back of my neck, like someone leaning over my shoulder to watch the road with me. I haven't told anyone else. No one would believe it, and honestly, I'm not sure I'd want them to. But sometimes I wonder if that man in the gray coat was warning me that night when the snow fell off the roof, or if he was trying to show me how easily I could disappear, the way he did. All I know is that when the bus is quiet and the snow is falling, and I feel the air shift behind me, I keep driving. I don't check the mirror, and I don't look back. Story number three. I don't really know how to explain what happened at that cabin, and I've gone back and forth between convincing myself it was just exhaustion or bad sleep, and then other nights lying awake, sure that it was something far worse. Maybe writing it down will help me make sense of it. It started as a normal weekend. My brother and I had rented a cabin deep in the woods for a fishing trip. It wasn't the typical Airbnb-style setup. This was more like an old shack someone had fixed up just enough to be usable. Wooden walls that smelled faintly of damp rot, a fireplace with soot-stained bricks, and a couch that looked like it had been dragged in from a thrift store. My brother snores like a freight train, so after one night of struggling to sleep in the shared bedroom, I dragged myself onto the couch. It wasn't comfortable, but it was better than feeling the walls vibrate with his snores. Around 2 a.m., I woke up with a jolt. The first thing I noticed was a weird tickling on my face. Not like a bug, not even like a strand of hair. More like someone lightly brushed their fingertips over my cheek. I swiped at it, sat up, and froze. The room was pitch black, darker than any city night I was used to. The fire had gone out, no wind rattled the windows, nothing moved. Just silence so complete I could hear my own blood in my ears. I told myself it was nothing and lay back down. The silence pressed in, but eventually I dozed off again. That's when it happened. A slow tugging, starting at my arm. At first I thought maybe I had rolled onto my blanket weird, but the sensation grew sharper, like something was sliding under my skin. My whole body went cold. It felt exactly like fingernails lightly tracing from my shoulder down to my wrist, except I couldn't move. My chest wouldn't lift. I could only shudder and blink. And that's when I saw it. By the dead fireplace, there was a shape, thin, pale blue, almost translucent, hunched like it didn't quite belong in the room. Its arms hung longer than they should have, and the hands were too big, the fingers too many. I tried to scream, but nothing came out. It tilted its head toward me, slow and deliberate, before melting back into the dark. I don't remember falling asleep, but I woke up hours later, drenched in sweat. My arm still burned where I'd felt the touch, and my skin itched deep beneath the surface, like ants crawling through my veins. My brother brushed it off as some kind of allergic reaction. Said maybe the couch had dust mites, maybe I brushed up against poison ivy when we arrived. But I hadn't left the cabin, not once. And nothing explained why the itch sat under the skin, not on top. The days passed, but the nights got worse. Every time I lay on that couch, the air felt heavier, charged with something I couldn't name. I started noticing small things too, like the fireplace. The first night, it had smelled like soot and wood. By the third night, the smell had shifted, faintly metallic, like dried blood. I swore I saw faint blue streaks staining the bricks, but when I blinked, they were gone. Once when I went to grab firewood outside, I noticed the dirt around the cabin was marked with shallow grooves. At first glance, they looked like dragged sticks, but they were too consistent, like someone pulling long fingers through the soil. I told myself it was raccoons, or maybe roots. Always tried to find some practical answer, but it never explained why, every morning, my arm itched worse. When we finally drove back, I thought leaving would put an end to it. But that night at home, I pulled off my shirt and saw faint lines running beneath my skin, like blue threads weaving just under the surface of my arm. Tiny scratches, too precise to be natural. I told myself it was some weird rash, maybe even psychosomatic. I didn't go to a doctor. I couldn't bring myself to explain that I thought something with too many fingers had written itself into me. The nightmares started then. In them, I was back on the couch, paralyzed, and the blue figure crouched beside me. Its hands didn't touch me this time. They slipped into me, scratching lazy patterns across my bones. I always woke with the same burning itch under my skin. One night, I woke up convinced I wasn't alone. My room was quiet, the street outside dead, but the bed dipped slightly, just enough for me to feel the weight of something lying beside me. My breath locked in my throat, the mattress pressed into my ribs, and the faintest scratch, feather light, traced down my arm. I didn't move until morning. Days blurred together after that. Some mornings I swore I saw faint smudges of blue on my sheets, like someone had dragged chalk-covered hands across the fabric. Other times I'd feel a tug on my shirt walking through my apartment, as if invisible fingers had hooked into the fabric for a second before letting go. I tried to convince myself it was stress, that maybe sleep paralysis could explain it, or that my mind was inventing things after the weird night at the cabin. But the scratches under my skin never went away. They've spread, faint, spider-webbing toward my shoulder, like veins but too crooked. The worst part is how ordinary life continues around it. I still go to work, still see friends. I laugh when people talk about ghosts or weird experiences, pretend I'm in on the joke. But every night when I turn off the lights, I feel the mattress dip slightly, and every morning, the itch is deeper. I've stopped telling anyone about it. My brother still insists it was allergies or a bad dream or some trick of the firelight. Maybe he's right. Maybe it's nothing. But sometimes in the dead hours of the night, I catch the faintest reflection in the dark glass of my window. Thin, blue, watching. And when I lie very still, I can feel the two long fingers tracing deeper, as if trying to find a way all the way in. Story number four. I grew up in a small rural town, the kind of place where nothing ever really changes. To get to my high school, I had two options. Either I walked the long way around the main road, with old trucks rattling past me, or I cut through the woods on a gravel trail everyone just called the shortcut. I took that shortcut almost every single morning for years. It was faster, quieter, and I could walk it with my eyes closed. At least I thought I could. It was late autumn when things went wrong. That morning, the fog was so thick, it felt like stepping into milk. I could barely see my own shoes, but I wasn't worried. My legs knew the path like muscle memory. The crunch of gravel underfoot was the only sound, soft and muffled, like the trees themselves were pressing in closer. Halfway down, something felt off. I stopped walking without meaning to. The trail forked. It had never done that before. I stared at the split, my stomach tightening. On the left, the gravel thinned out into damp earth. On the right, the path curved sharply into the fog. My rational brain kept telling me I must have been turned around somehow, or maybe I was standing at an angle that made the path look different. The shortcut had always been one straight line. Always, the branches above me knitted tighter, forming a ceiling that blocked out whatever little light the fog allowed through. I could no longer hear the distant hum of the highway behind me. It was silent. Not the usual woods kind of silent, where birds and insects still exist in the background. This was a vacuum silence, as if everything around me was holding its breath. I checked my watch. I'd been walking maybe 10 minutes. The air suddenly felt colder, like the damp cold that seeps into your skin and sits heavy in your bones. I shoved my hands deeper into my hoodie pocket and kept walking forward, figuring it had to reconnect to the trail I knew. My phone had no service, but that wasn't unusual out there. The ground beneath my feet shifted from gravel to soft moss, then to hard-packed dirt. Time stretched weird. It felt like I was moving in circles, though I never turned. After a while, the path ended at something I had never seen before. A tall wire fence, sagging with rust, crowned with barbed wire. On the other side of the fence, there were stone ruins, half-crumbled walls that looked ancient, though I'd never heard about anything like that being in our town. Beyond the ruins was a house, or what was left of one. The roof was collapsed in places, windows broken, walls blackened with mold. My chest tightened with the kind of dread that isn't logical. My instincts told me to turn around immediately, but I didn't. I pressed through a gap in the fence and crossed into the ruins. The air inside was heavier, colder still. My breath came out in short white puffs, and I could smell something sour, like meat left in the sun too long. That's when I saw him, a kid crouched in the dirt, hunched over something pale. At first, I thought it was sticks, but when I stepped closer, I saw it wasn't. He was playing with bones. They were small, but not small enough to be animal. His head snapped up. His face, I'll never forget it. He wasn't dirty or starved, the way you'd expect a kid lost in the woods to look. His eyes were too bright, wide, and unblinking. His teeth didn't look right. They were sharp, pointed, not just the canines, but all of them, like shards meant for tearing. His lips curled into something that wasn't a smile, more like a warning. I froze. The smell of rot burned at the back of my throat. Every cell in my body screamed at me to run. So I did. I turned back the way I came, heart hammering, but the fog had shifted. The gravel trail wasn't there anymore. Just endless tree trunks and a wall of underbrush so thick I had to claw through it with my hands. Branches scratched my arms, tearing at my clothes, and I kept stumbling over roots. My lungs felt like they were on fire, and all I could think of was that feral grin and the bones scattered like toys in the dirt. By the time I stumbled out of the woods, I was on the main road, but not where I should have been. I ended up almost 2 miles north of the trailhead, and 3 hours had passed. My watch confirmed it. My phone showed a handful of missed calls from my mom, who had been expecting me at school. No one believed me. They told me I must have gotten turned around in the fog, exaggerated what I saw. Some even joked that I was just making excuses for being late. I never walked the shortcut again. But here's the thing that keeps me up some nights. That trail doesn't exist anymore. The gravel path everyone used? It just stops now, less than 100 feet into the woods. It's overgrown, swallowed up by roots and weeds. And sometimes when I pass that part of the woods, I get this prickle along my neck, like someone's eyes are digging into me from deep inside the trees. Once, I thought I saw movement, something low to the ground, darting between trunks. The shortcut hasn't appeared again, but I can't shake the feeling that if it ever does, that kid will be waiting. Story number 5. I've been a delivery driver long enough to know the patterns of neighborhoods. After a while, you notice rhythms. The guy who always washes his car on Sundays, the dogs that bark the second they hear a van door slam, the kids waiting for the bus at the same corner every morning. These little consistencies become like landmarks. You stop seeing just buildings and streets and start seeing people's habits stitched into them. One of mine was the old woman in apartment 2B. The building wasn't much. A brick 3-story walk-up, probably built in the late 70s, with faded paint around the doorframe and rust stains near the gutters. I stopped there almost every afternoon, between 2:15 and 2:30, like clockwork. And every single day there she was, an old woman sitting by her second floor window, right above the row of mailboxes. The curtains were yellow once, but sun bleached to a washed out beige. She always sat just inside, in a high-backed armchair I could only half see. Her white hair was tied neatly in a bun, glasses perched low, cardigan buttoned up. She looked like every sweet grandma you could imagine. The first time I nodded without thinking, she smiled and gave a slow, small wave. Something about it made me smile back. After that, it became routine. I'd pull up, she'd look down, and we'd exchange that little wave. It was mundane but oddly comforting, like a tiny anchor in the middle of a hectic day. 6 months passed like that. Every weekday, same wave, same smile. Then came the day I had a package for 3B. It needed a signature, so I buzzed the tenant upstairs. A woman in her 30s answered, wearing workout clothes, a little flushed like she'd just come off a treadmill. While she signed, I mentioned casually that her downstairs neighbor was the most consistent person I'd ever seen. I joked that the old lady in 2B should get a medal for punctuality. The woman froze. Her pen hovered over the slip. Her face drained of color so quickly that I thought maybe I'd said something horribly offensive without realizing. Finally, she looked at me and said, "The old woman in 2B had died 5 years ago." I thought she was kidding at first, but her expression was dead serious. She told me the unit had been vacant ever since. The landlord tried to renovate, but workers never lasted. Tools vanished, doors wouldn't stay shut. Lights flickered constantly. People complained of cold spots and hearing someone moving around inside at night. Eventually, the landlord gave up and left it sealed. And then she said it. The woman had died in that armchair, the one by the window. I don't even remember walking back to my truck. My head was buzzing. My stomach felt hollow, like I'd missed a step on the stairs. The thing is, I waved to her the next day. She was there. Same cardigan, same bun, same slow wave. Her movements didn't look ghostly or blurred. She looked real, solid, like anyone else you'd pass on the street. I stood by my truck longer than usual, watching her, trying to catch some flicker or trick that would explain it. But eventually I raised my hand, and she waved back, perfectly normal. That night I tried to reason it out. Maybe someone else was living there, squatting, or the landlord secretly rented it out. Maybe the tenant upstairs was mistaken or playing a prank. Old women look similar sometimes. Maybe it wasn't the same lady who died. But in the pit of my stomach, none of those explanations felt right. A week later, I started noticing changes. Some days, the curtains would already be drawn when I arrived, but I could see her silhouette in the fabric. The outline of her head and shoulders was just pressed against the curtain, unmoving. It was the kind of stillness that makes you hold your breath. Another time, I swore her wave wasn't quite right. Her hand didn't lift in a casual motion. It rose slowly, jerkily, as though it took effort. Her smile didn't reach her eyes that day either. I remember getting into my truck faster than usual, shutting the door with too much force. Then came the package mix-up. I had a delivery for 1A, but absent-mindedly walked toward the second floor. I stopped in front of 2B before I realized my mistake. The door looked wrong. The paint was peeling around the frame, and a faint, sour smell seeped out from underneath, like damp carpet or spoiled food. I swear I felt the air colder there than in the stairwell. My arm hair stood straight up. I didn't knock. I backed away and delivered to 1A as quickly as possible. From that day, I couldn't ignore it anymore. I started dreading that stop. My hands would sweat on the wheel as I turned onto the street. Some days she was there, smiling as usual, like nothing had changed. Other days, the window was empty, and I'd catch myself scanning the glass over and over, waiting for her face to appear. Once she wasn't there when I arrived. I felt a ridiculous surge of relief, like I'd finally escaped. But when I turned away from the mailboxes, she was suddenly at the window. No slow turning of her head, no shifting of the curtain. She was just there, smiling down. My chest tightened like I couldn't breathe. I kept telling myself it could all be explained. Maybe someone moved in without the upstairs neighbor knowing. Maybe she had dementia and wandered back to her old apartment without the landlord realizing. Maybe the whole story about her death was neighborhood gossip exaggerated into legend. That's what I clung to, because the alternative gnawed at me every time I pulled up to that building. But 2 weeks ago, something happened that I can't shake. It was raining hard, the kind of downpour that makes the world look smeared. I pulled up and glanced at the window out of habit. She was there, as always. Only this time, the curtains were pulled wide open. I could see more of the room than ever before. The walls were bare, stained with water damage. The floor looked dusty, littered with debris. No furniture, except the armchair. She sat in it, smiling, cardigan buttoned neatly, hair in its bun. The only intact thing in the whole room was her chair and her. The rain made it hard to see, but I swear I noticed something. Her skin looked gray, not pale, gray like wet newspaper, and her glasses were gone. Her eyes were too dark, like shadows had sunk into them. I blinked, rubbed my face, looked again. The curtains were drawn shut. Since then, I can't pass the building without feeling watched. Sometimes I think I see movement at the window when I'm still down the street, a flicker of a figure parting the curtains to check if I'm coming. I've thought about changing my route, asking for a transfer, even quitting the job altogether. But part of me is stuck, because if she's there waiting, I almost feel guilty ignoring her, like I'm breaking some unspoken agreement we had. I don't know if I've been seeing a ghost, a squatter, or just losing my mind from routine and fatigue, but every time I pull up at 220, my stomach knots. I force myself not to look up. I pretend I don't feel her eyes on me. And yet, I know tomorrow, like every other day, she'll be there. Waiting. Story number 6. I spent 3 summers working as a fire lookout in one of the national forests out west. If you've never heard of the job, it's exactly what it sounds like. Sitting in a tower on a mountaintop, scanning the horizon for smoke, logging weather, and reporting anything unusual on the radio. It's the most beautiful and profoundly lonely thing you can imagine. I was the only person for miles, my closest human contact being the occasional supply run or the crackle of voices on the radio. My tower wasn't the only one on the ridge, though. Across the valley, barely visible on clear days, was another old tower, one that had been decommissioned back in the 80s. It had collapsed into itself over the years, leaving just a rusty steel skeleton. It looked like a rib cage jutting out of the forest. The old-timers told stories about the guy who used to man it, how he supposedly lost his mind from the isolation. But people say that about every outpost. My first two seasons were uneventful. The usual. Bears raiding supplies, a couple of hikers getting lost, one lightning strike that started a fire we caught early. But last summer was different. It started with a light. One perfectly clear night, I was scanning the ridge when I noticed a tiny yellow pinprick glowing where the old tower stood. At first, I thought it was a star, but it was too low and too steady. I grabbed my binoculars, and there it was, plain as day, a lantern burning in that ruined tower. My brain scrambled for explanations. Maybe some hikers had climbed up there somehow. But the place was fenced off and choked with brush, and everyone swore the stairs had collapsed decades ago. Curiosity got the better of me. I took my flashlight and flicked it on and off, just fooling around. A second later, the lantern blinked off and on in the exact same rhythm, like it was answering me. That first night, I didn't sleep. I brought it up to some of the rangers over the radio the next morning. They told me flat out that no one could have been up there, that the tower was unsafe and completely inaccessible. One guy even laughed and said I must have been looking at a campfire or a reflection. I didn't push it, but that night, the light was back. And the next, always faint, always steady, and always answering me when I tested it. After a week of this, I made the mistake of going down there. It was mid-afternoon, and I hiked across the ridge toward the ruins. The closer I got, the worse it smelled. A sour, rotting stench that made me gag. I thought maybe some animal had died nearby, but it clung to the place, thick in the air, making my skin crawl. At the base of the tower, the metal beams jutted up like black bones. That's when I saw them, footprints in the dirt. Bare feet, human, leading straight to the tower. I followed them, half daring myself until they just went up the wall. Not like someone had scrambled or slipped. They were pressed flat against the rusted steel, as if whoever made them had calmly walked upward in an upright position. I stood there frozen, my scalp prickling, every instinct screaming at me to leave. That's when I felt it, a warm breath against the back of my neck. I whipped around. Nothing. No sound but the wind moving through the trees. I didn't stay long after that. From then on, the nights felt different. The lantern still showed up across the valley, but I started noticing other things too. Whispers that carried on the radio when no one else was broadcasting. My logs and papers being slightly out of order, though I knew I hadn't touched them. Some mornings I'd wake up to find my cabin door ajar, though I was religious about locking it. The worst was the tapping. It started one night on the glass of my watchtower windows. Just a faint tap, 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 like fingernails. Always just one or two taps, never long enough for me to catch the source. At first I told myself it was branches or birds, but I was 60 feet up. The last week of the season, a storm rolled in. One of those mountain storms that feels like the world is splitting apart. Lightning tearing the sky, thunder cracking so loud you feel it in your ribs. I stood at the window, logging the storm patterns, when a bolt of lightning lit up the ridge. In that split second of blinding white, I saw it. A figure standing at the top of the ruined tower, perfectly still, holding the lantern. Its shape was wrong somehow. Too thin, too rigid, but unmistakably human in outline. The lightning faded and the tower went dark again. A heartbeat later, the yellow glow flickered back to life. I stood there frozen, watching as the lantern burned steady. Then one by one, the lights inside my own tower went out. First the desk lamp, then the radio display, then my flashlight, even though I hadn't touched it. The only light left was that faint yellow pinprick across the valley. And then it was gone. Just darkness. I don't remember how long I stood there gripping the window frame, waiting for it to come back. It never did. That was my last night up there. The supply truck came the next morning, and I didn't mention any of it. I told myself it could all be explained somehow. Maybe poachers sneaking in, maybe kids messing around with drones, maybe my brain playing tricks from too much solitude. But I've never felt silence like the silence that followed when that light went out for good. Not peaceful, not empty, just heavy, suffocating silence, like the forest itself was holding its breath. Even now, months later, I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night certain that I'm going to see a faint yellow glow out my window. It hasn't happened yet, but the silence that followed it that never really left. Story number 7. Claire was one of the prettiest girls I had ever met, and it wasn't just looks. She had this easy smile, this glow about her that made people turn their heads. We grew up together, lived 2 streets apart, shared school benches, ice creams, late-night study calls, everything. She wasn't just a friend. She was family to me. So when she told me she had a new boyfriend, I didn't say anything at first, though something in my stomach twisted. I met the guy once. He was off. Not in an obvious way, but in the small details. His eyes didn't match his smile. His grip on her arm was just a little too tight, and he always looked around like he was checking if anyone was watching. Claire laughed it off, told me I worried too much. I let it go, but not for long. Months later, Claire vanished. Not just missing vanished. No phone calls, no messages, no trace. Her parents filed a police report. I spent days putting up posters, combing through her usual hangouts. The boyfriend was questioned, of course. He shrugged everything off, claimed he had no idea where she went. The police didn't find enough to hold him. And then it was just silence. Weeks of silence. 2 months after she was gone, things started happening to me. It began with a strange night. I fell asleep in my own bed, and when I opened my eyes, I wasn't there. I was sitting on a cold bench near the town's old railway station. The early fog hung low, damp on my skin, and I could hear dogs barking somewhere far away. My phone said 3:17 a.m. I had no memory of walking there. I thought maybe I was sleepwalking. Stress does weird things to the brain. That's what I told myself. But the second night, it happened again. This time I woke up near the river, my shoes soaked, a smell of wet algae clinging to me. And that's when I saw her. Claire. She was standing on the thin concrete barrier.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Tropical Smoothie Cafe welcomes you to Tropic Time. I'll be your concierge. Our beach bites, including made-to-order wraps and bowls, are full of tropic vibes. And our fresh-from-the-blender smoothies make you feel absolutely radiant. It's like a wellness retreat for your taste buds. You're on Tropic Time now at Tropical Smoothie Cafe. Got breakfast plans? At Tropical Smoothie Cafe, hitting your protein goals is a breeze. With our smoothies, bowls, wraps, and diets featuring up to 32 grams of protein.
By the riverbank, barefoot, her dress pale and fluttering, even though the air was still. She walked along the edge like it was nothing, like gravity didn't matter to her anymore. I called out, at least I think I did, but no sound came out of my mouth. She was murmuring something, lips moving, but I couldn't hear. When I took a step forward, she turned her head toward me, and before I could reach her, I blinked and woke up in my own bed. Except no, not my bed. That night, I woke up in the empty parking lot of a grocery store, asphalt freezing against my palms. This kept happening, night after night, week after week. Every time I saw her, it was somewhere stranger. On the roof of the cinema, perched like a bird, walking the edge of the town's water tower. Once, balancing on the railing of a bridge, whispering words I couldn't catch. Always just out of reach. Always gone when I tried to get closer, and always, I woke up somewhere new. My body started showing signs, scratches on my arms from branches, mud on my jeans, shoes worn down faster than usual. I didn't know if I was actually walking there, or if my mind was dragging me into some half-dream state. One night stands out more than the rest. I found myself at the abandoned house on the edge of town. Everyone knows that place. Peeling paint, windows boarded up, kids daring each other to sneak in. Claire was there, moving along the upstairs railing like it was a stage. Her feet made no sound, her mouth moved faster than ever. This time I caught a fragment, just a few words. Something about her boyfriend, and then she simply vanished, like dust dissolving into the air. The next morning I woke up inside that house, On the cracked floor, light streaming through broken slats. My hands were scraped, dust in my lungs. I had no memory of entering it. That was the first time I was sure it wasn't just dreams. My body was really going places. I couldn't keep ignoring it. I convinced myself it was Claire trying to tell me something. Maybe she wanted me to confront him. So I built up the courage to talk to her boyfriend, to press him harder. But before I could, the news spread. He was dead, drunk driving. His car flipped near the highway, crushed like a soda can. After that, it stopped. No more sudden awakenings in strange places. No more sightings of Claire walking where people shouldn't walk. Just silence. At first, I felt relief. My body finally rested. But it wasn't peace. Something gnawed at me, because the timing was too neat. The moment he died, the visions, the sleepwalking, all of it ended. If she had been trying to tell me something, was that it? Did she want me to know he was responsible? Or was my brain spinning grief and suspicion into nightmares that only stopped once he was gone? I'll never know. Some days I try to explain it away. Sleepwalking brought on by stress. My mind planting Claire's image because I missed her. My feet carrying me places I already knew in town. Coincidence that it ended when he died. That's what I tell myself when the sun's out and everything feels normal. But nights are different. Nights, I remember the way she walked, the unnatural balance, the soundless steps, the words on her lips that didn't reach my ears. And I remember waking up with dirt under my nails from a place I'd never consciously walked into. I don't know if she's at peace. I don't know if I'll see her again. But sometimes when I lie in bed just before sleep, I swear I feel it. The faintest pressure, like someone balancing on the edge of my mattress. And I keep my eyes shut tight, because I'm not sure if I want to know who's really there.